just look at the museums. Let us look at the technical transfer. Let us look at debt cancellation. Let us look, first of all, at the apology. Let us look at the fact that there was tremendous genocide, you know, that was basically perpetrated by the United Kingdom on millions of Black people who came to the Caribbean. Let's start there. It's not only abhorrent. You have to get stronger in your actions. And that's what people want to see. Gone are the days when we would just accept a beautiful speech. That doesn't placate us, because words without actions only offend us. And that's what I think you saw when they came. And I think the Prince and the Duchess need to see this as an opportunity. It was an important trip for them. And rather than see it as a turbulent start, it's just the start. It's not the end of their journey. And they should use this start as a tipping point to shape how they're going to lead in their ascendancy.
Lisa Hanna, we want to thank you so much for being with us, senior member of Jamaica's Parliament. Democracy Now! Has an immediate job opening for a news writer producer. Visit democracynow.org/jobs to find out more and apply. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
This is KBOO Portland.
Show your support for KBOO programming by picking up the special limited edition KBOO Music That Moves You silicone collapsible water bottle. It's the perfect accessory to keep you hydrated while KBOO keeps you moving. Get yours now at kboo.fm/movesbottle.
Good morning. Today is March 28th, 2022, and you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 FM in Hood River, 104.3 FM in Corvallis. Via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. And I am Cecil Prescott, and I will be your host this morning. Thank you all for taking some time during your busy day to listen to our program. We are so grateful for all who are members of this community radio station and all those who are listening. I hope that you are able to have meaningful conversations with those around you. And that's one of the goals of this program, to have meaningful conversations and hopefully informative, and really hope that at some point it is transformative. The ability not only to speak, but to listen, and to open ourselves to new information and for the possibility that we and our world may change. I'll give you our numbers if you would like to join in our conversation this morning. Not right immediately, but in a few minutes. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And that is the number to call to join in our conversations. I mentioned that today is March 28th, meaning that there are only 3 more days left in the month of March. And I wonder if you or your neighbors or your families have been observing what is known as Women History Month, which is this month, March. Certainly there have been numerous programs on this radio station and throughout our communities which have focused on the contribution of women in our communities and in our history. Here's a little background information for you who are interested in knowing the origins of this commemoration. Women's History Month began as a local celebration in Santa Rosa, California. At that time, a few years ago, the Education Task Force of the Sonoma County Commission on the Status of Women planned and executed a Women's History Week celebration in 1978. Now, the organizers selected the week of March 8th to correspond to International Women's Day. And this movement began to spread across the country as other communities initiated their own Women's History Week celebrations the following year. In 1980, a consortium of women's group and historians, led by the National Women's History Project, successfully lobbied for national recognition. And in February 1980, President Jimmy Carter issued the first presidential proclamation declaring the week of March 8th as National Women's History Week. Subsequently, presidents continued to proclaim National History Week until 1987, when Congress passed Public Law 100-9, designating March as Women's History Month. Between 1988 and 1994, Congress passed additional resolution requesting and authorizing the president to proclaim March of each year as Women's History Month. And since 1995, each president has issued an annual proclamation designating the month of March as Women's History Month. That's a little background information on Women's History Month. And I wanted to focus some of my reflection not only on Women's History Month, but also about the confirmation hearings surrounding Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, if she is confirmed, will be the first Black American woman to sit on the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, many of you have heard and commented on the confirmation hearings of the Senate Judiciary Committee last week, and to be honest with you, it was somewhat painful for me at times to listen to it. In many ways, I selectively listened to it because there were some things I just could not bear to hear, such as Senator from Texas and his comments and questioning of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, such as she sits on a board of a private school, and questioning whether or not she was in the new boogeyman for many conservatives is CRT or critical race theory, whether or not she approved it, whether or not she approved the teaching of it in this school. Somehow ignoring the fact that his own daughter's children attend a private school who has promise and who has, maybe because of the uprisings in 2020, have committed itself to diversity equality and lifting up the voices of unheard voices. So, in spite of the fact, I wonder if he's going to pull his children out of that school, which is, I think, might come under the attack of critics of, you know, human rights, women's rights, civil rights, under the banner of CRT. But I came across an article that I would like to share with you that meant a lot to me. It is from The Nation magazine, and the author is Ely Mistel. And the title of it is Ketanji Brown Jackson, Long Pause Explained Racism and Sexism in America. It's published in The Nation magazine. And it goes like this. For me, it was the pause. I knew that the confirmation hearing for Ketanji Brown Jackson would produce a lot of insults and smears from Republicans trying to be racist enough for Fox News viewers to get the message, but not so racist that the New York Times would have to acknowledge it. Jackson surely knew it too. And despite over 20 hours of questioning over 2 days, during which Republicans yelled at her and grandstanded and repeatedly insinuated that she was a terrorist and a child sex trafficker sympathizer in front of her daughters and parents, she never once lost her cool. But she did take one really long pause. During Tuesday opening rounds of questions, Senator Ted Cruz went into a full racist smear mode. Cruz is a former law school classmate and Harvard Law Review colleague of Jackson's. But for many, many white boys from that school, the comity and collegiality of this shared alma mater only seemed to extend to fellow whites. Jackson is a black woman, and Cruz's teeth were out. He was trying to scare white voters by implying that Jackson was a black radical who believed in, quote, critical race theory, end of quote, and would use her position on the court to put dangerous thoughts in the minds of white children. Only it was Ted Cruz doing this, so his teeth were crooked, dull, and almost unintentionally comical. Cruz came prepared with posters, like an office manager who never learned how to use PowerPoint. The posters were blown-up pages from a children's book, Anti-Racist Baby, written by Dr. Ibram X. Kendi. So the images were of blobbishly drawn, racially indistinct baby in a diaper playing with blocks. Remember, this is the middle of a Senate confirmation hearing for a lifetime appointment to the highest court in the land, and Cruz was up there with his picture book report and arts and crafts. Cruz pointed to his poster, and his most wolfishly serious voice asked, "Do you agree that babies are racist?" Jackson started to answer. She said, "Senator." And then she sighed. And then she paused for a long time. As the silence filled the room, I felt like I could see Jackson make the same calculation nearly every black person and ancestor has made at some point while living in the New World. It's the calculation enslaved people made before trying to escape to freedom, or activists made before sitting down at the white lunch counter. but it's also the calculation of a woman makes before responding to the email of the failed son who was just promoted ahead of her, or the calculation I make when white executives comments on my Twitter feed but not my published columns. It's the calculation when black people try to decide, am I gonna risk it all for this? Jackson took a moment to decide if it was worth it to throw everything away. Her chance, her good name, maybe even her whole career, just to tell Ted Cruz, a man she's known for over 25 years, what she really thought of him. She decided against it, of course. She eventually spoke. I do not believe that any child should be made to feel as though they're racist. She then resumed her normal posture and didn't repeat the sigh or the pause for the rest of the hearing. Toni Morrison says, "The very serious function of racism is distraction." But Jackson knew it wasn't worth being distracted by Cruz or any of the small-minded and condescending white people arrayed against her on the Senate Judiciary Committee. She worked too hard and bested too many of the white man's little trap to get tripped up near the finish line by senators who debased themselves and their offices for 30 seconds of attention on Tucker Carlson's show. Jackson pass her test. But it was hard to watch her be put through the crucible of white approval. The attacks used by Republicans against her weren't about her qualifications. Everybody knows she's more than qualified to be on the Supreme Court, and even most of the Republicans said so. The attacks weren't about her personal behavior or ethics. Again, even Republicans remarked that she had lived a good life and there's been no whiff of scandal and no suggestion of sexual assault, which is not something you can say for all Supreme Court nominees. Instead, Republicans simply pronounced her guilty by association with people and stereotypes of people they don't think belong in America. Take Cruz's attacks on the books he doesn't like. There was no evidence that Jackson has read Anti-Racist Baby or any of Kendi's other books, or if she liked them or agreed with them. And if she had read the book, there was no evidence that Judge Jackson used her Kindle as a list of sources for her opinions. But it didn't matter. Kennedy's black and Jackson's black. So for some reason, it's okay to ask Jackson to answer for the ideas in Kennedy's book. Cruz claims he was asking because the book is in the library at this school Jackson sent her kids to. But the book is also in the library of the school Cruz sent his kids to. Take me. Jackson was asked by Senator Marsha Blackburn if she agreed with a Demand Justice Board member, that's the author of this article, who had argued in favor of adding 10 justices to the Supreme Court. And they write, "My actual position is 20 now." The author writes, "I've never met Jackson. And there's no evidence that she's ever heard of me or has read my court expansion arguments or agrees with them. But I'm black, and she's black. And so for some reason, it was okay to ask her about it." Of course, the highlight attack on Jackson was about her records as a sentencing judge, specifically in child pornography and drug cases. Jackson's record is here is mainstream and tracks with other district judges and with what other district judges do in similar cases, including judges confirmed by Republicans and one promoted by Senator Josh Hawley, who led these attacks against her. Hawley's attacks are so baseless that even the conservative National Review has told him to knock it off. The author continues, but for some reason, Republicans think these charges of soft on crime and soft on porn will stick. Senator Tom Cotton criticized Jackson for not consulting victims of a drug kingpin she sentenced. And when Cotton was told there were no actual victims on the record for her to consult, he lashed out and told her to talk to the 100,000 victims of drug crimes, as if the man she sentenced should be sentenced for crimes he did not commit. Senator John Cornyn literally worried that Jackson might be compassionate. As if that's a bad thing in a justice appointed for life? The upshot is that Jackson was being criticized not for her mainstream actions, but for her participation in a criminal justice system Republicans always characterize as too lenient to criminals when trying to scare white voters. And the writer continues, it was emotionally affecting to watch Jackson, a ridiculously accomplished black woman, being forced to dance to the tune of these mediocre white senators who were trying to reduce her to a caricature. But you don't have to take my word for it. Senators Cory Booker and Alex Padilla, who both happened to be people of color, both gave impassioned defenses of the nominees on the second day of questioning. Both choked up while doing so. Booker was saying he wasn't going to let the rest of the Senate steal my joy. Padilla, while recounting how teachers once told him he shouldn't bother trying to get into MIT. People should notice what kind of nominees senators feel empathetic toward. Back in 2018, it was Republicans like Lindsey Graham who were getting emotional, in that case in his defense of prep school bro Brett Kavanaugh, accused of attempted rape by a credible named witness who gave testimony before the Senate. Republicans acted personally offended on behalf of Kavanaugh, and 4 years later, they were still bringing him up during Jackson's hearing. Cruz even derisively referred to the allegation of attempted rape as an inquiry into the nominee's, quote, teenage dating habits, end of quote. Cruz couldn't be more odious if he showed up to work in the cologne of a skunk. I think it's a grave insult to Jackson to put her in the same sentence as Kavanaugh, but my mind couldn't avoid juxtaposing the two over the course of the hearing. Surprisingly, Senator Tom Tillis put my frustrations into word near the end of the second day of questioning. Tillis, after joining fellow Republicans and saying a bunch of stupid stuff about her record, praised Jackson's demeanor and reflected on how hard it must be for her during the hearing. He noted there are 11 Republican senators against one, and he acknowledged that these senators have way more power in the hearing room because, quote, it's not like you can really come at us, end of quotation. This statement, while offered in good faith, is one that only applies to a woman or a person of color. Because we all know from the Kavanaugh hearings that white men who are up for confirmation can yell and scream and cry and threaten the Senate. They can come at the Senate. They can do exactly what Tillis accurately said Jackson cannot. Nothing at all bad will happen to white men who scream at senators. In fact, it helps them. People, white people, who are part of the institution that has just been screamed at, would say that the yelling and the threats were justified and applaud the white man for standing up for himself. Which is why the moment from Jackson's Supreme Court confirmation hearing that will be indelible in my hippocampus is the pause. In that pregnant pause, everyone in the country who was watching got to see whiteness at work. Everyone knew that Ted Cruz got to stand up there and call Ketanji Brown Jackson whatever he wanted to, and nobody would stop him. Everybody knew that Jackson could not respond in kind if she wanted the job. And everybody knew that, in the same situation, Kavanaugh could and did sneer at his questioners, threaten the Senate with political retribution, and declare his undying love for Beer without hurting his chances at unaccountable lifetime power. Power he now holds. That pause, that moment, that clear difference in the range of human possibilities afforded to Jackson and Kavanaugh. That's racism, folks. That's sexism. That silence was a clearer definition of the things that I could give in 1,000 years. I can't prove it, but I saw it, and Jackson saw it, and Booker saw it, and Padilla saw it, and I can only hope that people of good faith and decency saw it too. Because if you can't see it, then you are useless in the fight to stop it. And that, my friends, was an article written by Ely Misto, the nation's justice correspondent, and the author of a book, Allow Me to Retort, A Black Guy's Guide to the Constitution. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. I would appreciate your thoughts or comments on this article or things around what this author said about sexism and racism and how it works. Let's go to our first caller, Molly. Good morning, Molly.
Good morning, Cecil. Really enjoying your show as ever, and I love your beautiful, eloquent speech about our wonderful, I know she'll make it to the ship. Could only echo the words that you spoke of the sigh heard round the world. Yes. And I think it was, and I think it was powerful, as powerful can be. But I just want to throw into the mix, being a woman, last night's Academy Awards slap heard round the world.
Okay.
Or maybe it was a punch in the face from Will Smith to and the reason I'm bringing it up is because I'm still trying to figure out what I think about it. I didn't think of it as an act of violence because, well, let me just say that if Chris Rock had been white, it never would have happened. Mm-hmm. But because it was two black men, and he insulted Will Smith's wife. I mean, let's get real about it. And so that was what was so beautiful, is that it was real. It wasn't acting. All these great actors, all this wonderful recognition of great acting, and certainly the deaf community certainly got recognized around the world. But the fact that Will Smith got up there and punched, you know, if she had had her head shaved for style, that would have been different. But it was a sensitive thing where she had some hair loss, and I'm sure she was very sensitive and self-conscious about it, and Will, being her husband, knew this. And he wasn't about to let his woman be dissed on national TV. So what he did was standing up for his woman. And this is something that it's not all about women. It's also men standing up for their woman. And that kind of sounds sexist in itself. But we're male and female on this planet. And I thought it was actually kind of a beautiful thing that he stood up for his woman. And Chris Rock saw there was a line there about comedy and disrespecting somebody. He kind of dissed her. So I just wanted to say that in honor of all women, and certainly Judge Jackson. She's going to be the greatest ever. RBG would be turning her grave and clapping to see that somebody like this could be coming on the Supreme Court, somebody as great as she is and as qualified and beautiful, embodying everything and the power of a woman. And let me just say, let's have women run the whole world, because we wouldn't be having the problems we do today.
Sure.
But
hold on for a second, because I want to ask you about the slap heard around the world. First of all, it's assault. It's violence.
Yes, I agree.
And last time I looked, that sort of assault was a criminal offense.
Yes, and I'm sure Will Smith feels terrible about it, and I agree on that level, but as a woman...
Well, let me ask you, as a woman, because at some point, because in some sense it's sort of like the man standing up for his woman, it would seem to me like the silencing of women again.
Of the what?
The silencing of women. The man has to stand up to defend his woman. That's...
Well, it gets a little sexist there in the whole thing. The thing is, it happened, and it was a shock to everybody, and including, I'm sure, Will, and I'm sure to Chris Rock, too. And it's interesting. To me, it was interesting because it was not acting, and acting is trying to embody what we as humans are going through on this planet together. And certainly respect is one of the most fundamental things. So that was a very crazy and bold move. As he said, I hope the Academy invites me back. And I agree, but I don't think he meant to hurt, in the assault sense of the word, Chris Rock. I think, well, let me just say it this way.
Okay.
A woman has always used a slap in the face when she is put in a place of having to fight back. The slap in the face is always something that a woman has used.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts.
Thank you for your wonderful show, Cecil. I just love listening to it.
Oh, great. Have a great day.
It's Holly. Good. Very educational today, too, on where women's movement started. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have this contrast between Ketanji Brown Jackson and that pause where women and people of color have always had, is it worth it? Is it worth it? And she decided, Judge Brown Jackson decided she would not give the response. She started to say there was that long pause, and she calculated. That's something that people who are not in power often have to do. Molly mentioned the Academy Awards last night. The fact that Mr. Smith thought it was his right to get up on the stage and slap this other man, unlike Ketanji Brown Jackson, he probably did not consider whether or not he would lose anything, whether it was worth it, because after all, he's independently wealthy, a power force in Hollywood and would probably suffer a few consequences for his action. Not something that people not in power have the luxury to do. Okay, enough comment. Let's hear what your thoughts are. Okay, we have a full panel here, so let's try Dr. Freddie. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, your thoughts.
I really, really enjoyed your last caller, but I enjoyed what you were saying about, is there an author in the article about what's going on with Judge Jackson from the New York magazine? Is that what it's called, the New York magazine?
The Nation.
The Nation, oh,
yes.
Yeah. Okay, it's hard to write when you just wake up.
And oh, listen. Yes.
Okay, The Nation magazine. Okay, and I really enjoyed how she, her fortitude, her tenacity to sit there while she's been, you know, just ridiculed and put down, and it was awful. I cried for her.
Yes.
I don't even know her, okay? And I cried for her, and I was so happy when Cory Booker had something to say
yes.
in her defense, and it was wonderful. I'm just saying, people of color have had to endure so many things that were wrong all for 400 or 500 years, and it still goes on. Racism is alive today as it was in slavery. All I want to say is, as an American, we need to be ashamed of what happens in this country, okay? And we're not always innocent. And see, when I hear people talking about the CRT, you need to read it. It's for college students. It's not for 1 through 12. That's the way I was told it was supposed to be, for college students only. And it's not going to hurt anybody in college to know the truth, okay? And if there's anything more to it, the truth is the truth. Why should it hurt anybody?
Yes.
They don't. Slavery doesn't hurt white children to hear about how black people were treated. Why should they hurt now to know all the other things that happened to black people? I think it's really a double standard for everybody, and that's my opinion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you so much for your call and for your reflection and the fact that black people, people of color, and women, those who have no power, have had to put up with a lot. And, you know, on a side note, the book that Senator Cruz put up, Anti-Racist Baby, because of that, it went up to, like, the number one bestseller. And it's a book I have used with children. It's a wonderful book. It's a wonderful education book that I have used, and Ibram Kendi's writing is something I think we should commend rather than challenge. Our number is here, 503-231-8187. And our next caller is Dempsey. Good morning, Dempsey.
Yes, good morning. Cecil, how are you?
I'm well.
I listened to the questioning of Ketanji Jackson Brown, unlike a lot of people saw it on TV.
Yes.
But I heard it on the radio over, like, I didn't hear all of it, but I heard enough where I wanted to reach through the radio. And speaking of slapping people, I wanted to slap Tom Cotton, but I couldn't. My arm don't reach over the airwaves. So, but yeah, it really sounded like the Republicans maybe got together and tried to figure out what kind of words, what kind of questions would break her down.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep on repeating and rephrasing the same question and frustrate her. And I really appreciate the article that you read. And as I was listening, my mind went to my experience. I lived in Taiwan for 12 years. I lived in Ethiopia for 3 years.
Mm.
And I think every American should leave the United States for a while to get some perspective, even more than just a vacation. And I say that because me having the skin color that I have, I look like a European. I'm American. And when I walk the streets of Taiwan, which is a country where people don't get a lot of, like, geography or whatever, they focus on their own people pretty much. And what struck me as interesting is if I'm walking the street with a black American, an African American, people don't recognize black skin as an American or even as a potential American. But me, the word that they use if they see me or any other white skinned person is American. They see a black person and they use the Chinese word for black man or African. And I just, you know, I just want to remind people that just like what's that Republicans who said that he inferred that black people aren't Americans on TV last month or whatever. McSomebody. You know who I'm talking about or what I'm referring to. But I'm just saying, like, the world does not see African Americans as American citizens, and it's because our media and our politics and everything doesn't, I mean, even the United States, you could be Asian and you could be a Latino and still not be considered American. I also had a friend of mine who was born in Nicaragua by Taiwanese parents, so he grew up speaking Spanish. His family moved to LA. He lived in East LA, so spoke Spanish still. He graduated from UCLA, came to Taiwan, and there was a job I couldn't take teaching English. He showed up. I gave it to him. I said, can you do this job and let the people know this person's going to replace me? He shows up. The principal meets him at the door, and he says, hello, my name is Bruce Yen. I'm here to teach English. I'm your English teacher. Oh, no, no. We wanted an American.
Right. Yeah.
I am an American. No, no, no. You're not American. Well, you need my passport. So, like, it's the face.
Yes.
The face for them must be a white face. And I know Latinos and other people who have a white face, and they could get a job as an American English teacher. But I just think, you know, like, we are, as a country, we're still not recognizing the fact that it's only white people in America who are considered American, Americans. And that is just like a basic flaw in our society we have to take a look at honestly and directly.
Very good. Thank you so much. I think you're so accurate in terms of what is seen as the American and white skin privilege. Yeah. Thank you, Dempsey. It reminded me not only the fact that people of color are not viewed as the American, and this article I read this morning sort of like suggested that so much, and contrasting the Senate confirmation hearings of Justice Kavanaugh with Judge Brown Jackson, and the privilege that his white skin male privilege provided him, and cover that did not provide for Judge Brown Jackson. And similarly, as our last caller just said, it's an experience not only happening in everyday life, but also around the world. Let's go to our next caller. Ron, good morning, Ron. Thank you for waiting.
Well, good morning, Cecil. Long time no talk to you.
Yes.
I want to comment on a couple things. First of all, on Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, she was the epitome of grace. She showed us all how to act, how we could act. We need to learn patience. We need to learn not to react to when people try to harass us, and act, you know, to a point, you know, you have to react at some point. But for the most part, use patience. And understand where people are coming from, and even sometimes where people just misunderstand and may say something offensive to you. Just like my second point would be when Chris Rock was slapped by Will
Smith.
My memory fails me. Will Smith. Chris Rock did not necessarily know that Jada's had alopecia. Okay, so he was just doing his job, making fun of people, you know, as he does. And Will Smith. You know, probably overreacted because he didn't know, you know, he didn't know that Chris Rock didn't know, you know, we don't know. But I'm pretty sure that Chris Rock didn't know, or he wouldn't have made fun of her. So, you know, you go.
A couple of thoughts that I heard, you know, is sort of like, it reminds me of the 1990s. I don't know if you're familiar with, like, these hip-hop awards in the 1990s when it got somewhat violent on stage. But it also occurred to me that, you know, Will Smith is a, you know, 50-something-year-old man. And the fact that he reacted that way and what happened after that scene, Denzel Washington, and he commented on it when he gave his acceptance speech a few minutes later, people, Denzel Washington and Tyler Perry, two other well-accomplished, you know, men in Hollywood, black men in Hollywood, went over to Will Smith and sort of like saying, like you have to chill, man. And he referenced what Denzel Washington said, that when you at your highest point, and that this isn't word for word, that's when the devil comes after you. And so in that very strange moment, it also proved to me the ability for community to come together and to find another way. So I appreciate how Denzel Washington and Tyler Perry, and also P. Diddy, who came on the stage right after that, and he said, "We're gonna chill, and we're gonna go somewhere else, and you know, have a conversation about it." It showed to me that at that point, when things could have went left field, in this case, black men offer wisdom and advice to Will Smith, which I think you saw some of it in his acceptance speech a few minutes after the incident.
Exactly. And that's what we need more of. We need more examples of men showing some patience and understanding for one another and you know, helping those that don't. You know, that's why I brought Ketanji Brown Jackson's up first, because mm-hmm. You know, too often we look to see going off,
yes.
You know, as the masculine thing to do. It's not
right.
Okay, and we often, you know, look at those that we look up to as examples of what to do, you know, as macho guys. That's not the way to go, and we as blacks especially need to learn that lesson, because I think we look too often to our white counterparts to as examples, and they're not necessarily examples, you know, because they're macho and, you know, and they want to be bad. Bad's not what it's about. You know, it's about understanding. It's about grace. You know, learn to be graceful. You know. That's all I have to say. I appreciate talking to you.
Well, thank you so much, Ron. Thank you for calling.
All right.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO-FM. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We began our conversation about the judiciary hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, and also referenced the Academy Awards last evening. Let's go to our next caller, Alan. Good morning, Alan.
Hi there. I wanted to first address, I will refer to her as Lady Ketanji Brown Jackson, because she handled herself so well, and just all viciousness of the questioning. I don't remember the words, and I know they're important, but it's also the emotion that you... And these people are professional speakers. They are lawyers, and they know the power of word and the emotion that is delivered behind. And she handled herself. And it's funny, because they often say whenever the Supreme Court makes a decision, they're always poised to do this. Well, she already has poise. She's already there in my book. But about the Chris Rock, Will Smith thing, Chris Rock, I've heard him before, and I don't listen to him, but... there's many, and Chappelle's another one, but they make fun. You can either laugh at people or laugh with them, and they have not learned the art of turning that into a with us.
Yeah, that's true. Either laugh, you know, with them, or, you know, go with the flow. And
there's a way, you know, George Carlin, there's many, and I'm sure Richard Pryor, I don't want to leave anybody out, but they can do these things with a standing grace, you know, make a really harsh political or some other comment. But here's the thing. So many of these comedians, what they're doing is they're making fun of us, our foibles. It's not the something they know stupid what they do. And, you know, people make mistakes. That's why we're here, mostly.
Right. Yeah.
To learn, and it helps when somebody's, again, with us instead of at us all the time.
All right.
So hats off to, what are we going to do here? We've got to do the word right. Soon to be Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson.
All right. Let's hope so. Hey, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. And you're listening to More Talk Radio on here on your community radio station, KBOO. And as our last caller was sharing, it occurred to me that a couple of things. One is, and this last caller said it, and another caller also referenced Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, her grace, her ability to pause, and lifted it up as a wonderful characteristic, which it is, and I agree. But I'm contrasting, I think, a point in the article I read, which is the fact that she had to do that. And women and black people and people of color have always had to say, whether or not I can respond, and whether or not, you know, if I want to respond as I want to respond, depending on the situation, whether I will survive or live. You can only do that because you have ability or power. And the contrasting in the article between the judiciary hearings and now Justice Brett Kavanaugh, and how he got angry, and you could see his blood, his face turning red, and he was angry, and he yelled back because he was accused by a very credible witness of horrendous acts. And, you know, he could respond that way and not worry about whether or not he would get the job. I doubt, you know, Ketanji Brown Jackson, in that pause, he said, if I respond like I want to respond, I'm going to be seen as, quote, the angry black woman. And, you know, so often, people without power have to put up with so much and keep so much inside. And why? Because they have to. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. If you have any thoughts or any wisdom to share with us about Ketanji Brown Jackson, we touch upon the Oscars last night. There's so much about that. And that was actually the first time I actually watched an awards show since I don't know when. And it was quite an event. In fact, you know, we could, I'm not an entertainment critic, or so what I have to say, you know, has no significance whatsoever, but I was sort of like excited and by the awards that film Coda gained, and the lifting up of the deaf community. And Mr. Smith and Mr. Rock, I'm sure that they will say much in the days ahead and will read much in the days ahead. It just also occurred to me that, you know, Will Smith is a comedian who's often, as our last caller and another caller referenced, that, you know, comedians often go to the edge. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I think he could have had the same effect when Mr. Rock said, after Will, slap him, went back to his seat and yelled out twice, "Keep my wife out of your effing mouth." Twice, Mr. Rock said, "Yes, I will." I think Mr. Smith could have had the same power, the same effect, without resorting to violence. I thought it was interesting that the reaction of Jada Pinkett Smith, where, she did this wonderful roll of her eyes. And I think that said as much as Mr. Smith slap. Well, I want you to stay tuned for at KBOO, and particularly I want you to listen to, oh gosh, where did I write down, a program that's related to something I wanted to touch upon today. The fact that in a little more than a month, there will be primaries in Oregon, May 17th. 19 Republicans are running for governor. 15 Democrats are running for governor. I mean, these are the names we have to think about. In Multnomah County Chair, there are 6 candidates for Multnomah County Chair, and 3 of them are sitting commissioners. So it's sort of like you're sitting there in the council knowing that the person sitting next to you is running for the seat that you want. Must be interesting dynamics. In Portland City commissioners, 9 candidates are running for seat number 2, which has an incumbent, and 11 candidates are running for seat number 3, which has an incumbent. And in the newly designated Congressional District 6, because of the censor, Oregon now has 1 more congressional district. In the new Congressional District 6, 8 Democrats are running and 7 Republicans are running. And have you ever spent any time thinking about the election yet? You ought to. I want you also to tune in tonight for Prison Pipeline, where a candidate for Washington County DA will be interviewed. And this might be one way in which you can begin, if you haven't already, your process of discerning the candidates and issues that you should be concerned about and will vote on in, six weeks or so. So that's on KBOO Prison Pipeline tonight at 6:30. But following this program, if you are listening live, is the OMO Variety Hour. And following that will be Locust Focus. Following that is Spring is on its Way. All programs here on your community radio station. Let me encourage those of you who are not members to become members. Go to kboo.fm, click on the donate portion of the website on your right upper right hand corner and become a contributing member of this radio station. Thank you all for listening and being a part of our radio program. I really appreciate those of you who called in and share your wisdom and your thoughts, and I hope that you will continue to do so. Have the wisdom and the patience of Ketanji Brown Jackson when you are talking with people of different opinions, but also the wisdom to know when to speak and how to speak. Thank you so much for listening, and stay tuned to programming which is so important for you and for your community. I am Cecil Prescott, and I've been your host this morning, March 28th, 2022 on More Talk Radio. See you soon.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO